doesn't really matter. There you go. So, Bob, are we going to record? That's here, huh? Thanks. Hey, he's got a load of it. Now, do people have reading calendars? Is anybody missing a reading calendar that would like one? Because the reading calendars, I'm going to be today. I'm going to be accumulating six portions in review, and trying to show you some of the linkages between Torah, Haftorah, Brit Chadashah, Torah, the prophets, and the New Covenant. And we're going to be laying out a framework, which I hope will be something that you find helpful for years to come. Oh, this is already recording. How do you like that? Let's pray. Help us, Lord, to figure out from the Bible what the categories are that are important to you. Help us to be able to see your story as you've revealed it in the Scriptures. And help that to be a reality in our lives, Lord, that we might build directly on the Scriptures in our lives in ways, Lord, that allow us to live godly lives. And in ways, Lord, that we praise you and lift up your Son, that he might draw all men to himself, our living salvation, Yeshua. For we pray in his name. Amen. Amen. If we have a calendar here, we started out, the Torah talks about Bereshit, right? Bereshit in the beginning. And a lot of times if you have a little world and it opens up into a big world, the little world gives you a glimpse of what the big world is that's coming. So sometimes you get a little picture and then that turns out to be a big picture in your life. And the Scriptures work that way, and that's why Genesis is foundational for the Torah. And that's why the Torah is a blueprint which gives us God's story in how he is reaching out. Now, how did he originally start reaching out? Bereshit bara Elohim et hashamayim ve'et ha'aretz. Bereshit. We get a tivka. Bereshit. It's a pause. In beginning of what? It's before there was a heaven and earth. What happened? In beginning of, before time, God created. In beginning of what? What's the object? A sentence. God created the heavens and the earth. God created the universe. So in beginning of, before the universe, in beginning of, God created everything. It's saving faith. It's ex nihilo. It's creating out of nothing that which never existed. It's a new beginning. The very first beginning is a new beginning. Bereshit, in beginning of, bara Elohim et hashamayim ve et haaretz. In beginning of, created God. What did he create? The universe. Everything that was the waters above and what turns out to be the earth. We move on to the second thing, and it's like, before we get there, man's already messed it up. So God created everything. It's perfect. We get to day three. He says, very good, twice. He's really walling off heaven from earth on day two. And on day three, he's creating vegetation and the tree of knowledge and the tree of life. And he says, good after he creates, and then good again after he creates a tree of knowledge and a tree of life. But he's already walled off heaven in day two. And in day two, he will push the waters above. He put a firmament up there where he separates off heaven from earth. He doesn't say good. Every other time he says good. He creates man in day six, very good. And day seven, he looks around and what doesn't happen? Day seven, we're supposed to rest. Why? Because on 6 days God worked. Melacha. On day seven, nothing. What's missing? Rest. Rest. Rest is missing. So God rests. And if we're made in the image of God, if we're to walk in the footsteps of God, if we're to copy our Father who's in heaven, if we're to be like our Father who created us, if we're to approach life the way God approaches life, then if He spends 6 days, we spend 6 days. If He spends 1 day, we spend 1 day. And so we end day seven, rest in grace. And grace is this idea, it's more than an idea, but grace is God reaching out. Grace is something that God makes available to us. Grace is something that we're to rest in. Grace is that which causes joy. Grace is favor from God. Grace is acceptance from God. Favor, acceptance, and joy cause it. And why does grace cause joy? Because grace is a response to a kindness bestowed. A kindness, covenant kindness, is chesed. So what is God doing? He grants us a kindness. When we have the covenant, we're to walk in kindness. What's our response to God being kind? Joy. Peace. Rejoicing.
Peace.
Fruits of the Spirit. But underneath, deeper, if the first response, the fruit of the Spirit, is what?
Love.
Joy. Mm-hmm. It will read right into there immediately. So you got love, that's a binding force. You got joy, that comes from kindness from God. That comes as a response. Grace causes joy for a kindness bestowed. So our response to God, our response to grace, is to jump for joy. Our response to a kindness bestowed from God is to rejoice. And I'll go further, once we really begin to rejoice, to glory in God for what He has bestowed. Now, you read Genesis 1:4, it's like once the heavens are created and the earth, and God pushes the waters up. I mean, before He does much, He says, Yihior. That's the first word you hear. Yihior vayihior. And God said, Yihior. And God said, let there be light. So you've got this mud soup here in creation. It's water, it's dirt, it's black, it's light, it's red, it's pink, it's mud. I said that again. It's water mixed with earth. It's chaos. It's a mud soup with light and dark in it. It's real, unformed, nothing. And then He pushes waters above and below in order to begin to bring order out of this muck that He created. But He puts all the ingredients there and then He begins to separate out and create distinctions. And the first thing He says is, Yihior. And I'm going to say that in Colossians 1:12, when Yeshua comes, 1:12, 1:13, that we're transferred out of darkness into light when Messiah breaks in. Because in Him was life, and His life was the light of men. No. Yes. John 1:9, somebody look it up. In Him was light. I thought men, you know, we love the darkness. But in Him was light. Well, what kind of light? It's light that breaks into creation. When God says, Yihior, let there be light, and there was light. When we're dealing with new creation, in Him was light, and His light was the life of man. Somebody read John 1:9.
There was the true light which coming into the world enlightens every man.
It's true light, and enlightens every man. Now go to Colossians 1:12 and 13. So I'm going to start by saying Torah, we have God creating something. And when we're looking at links between the Torah and the Haftorah and the Brit Hadashah, we're going to see that light sort of runs across these categories. Colossians 1:12 and 13.
Giving thanks to the Father for having made you fit to share in the inheritance of His people in the light. He has rescued us.
He's made us fit to share an inheritance of who?
His people.
People in the light. Now remember, men love darkness, but he's the true light that came into the earth world that enlightens the eyes. So some people cross over from this darkness. Verse 13 now.
He has rescued us from the domain of darkness and transferred us into the kingdom of his dear son.
This is redemption. He's rescued us what? From what?
Domain of darkness.
From the domain of darkness. Now, in the beginning of the creation, light wasn't good and darkness was evil. This happened over time. This happened after the fall. This happened when we corrupted stuff that was created perfect to start with. But what did he do? He rescued us from
the domain of darkness and transferred us into the kingdom of his dear son.
Transferred us into the kingdom of his dear son. And we're in there with the people of light. People that dwell in the light. So there's a kingdom and there's rules. And under one, there's darkness and there's a domain and there's authority and there's rules. And we're right here in this world where you got light and dark all mixed up together. And some people are under the rules of dark, some people are under the rules of light. And when you're under the rules of dark, and the other guy's under the rule of light, it isn't that obvious. We're all veiled here. You got a soul, it's veiled by a body. The life's in the blood, the blood's covered over with arteries, the arteries are covered over with skin, the skin's covered over with clothes, the clothes are covered over with material resources and households, the households are covered over. And you see a person, they're driving around in a big car with wealth, and they're dressed right, and they're hiding behind all these coverings. And the darkness has got its rules, and you pay them homage? You treat them with respect immediately? And some other guy that looks like a tramp that's got no clothing and nothing? And you say, that guy, he's in trouble. Immediately you make judgments about people based on nothing to do with who they are. Just what has to do with their circumstance. And what is that? Where is that coming from? What rules are operating here that everybody agrees on what's going on? Materialism. Well, materialism, that's a kingdom of darkness. It's a domain of darkness. And the rules are, if you got a lot, you're better than if you got a little. And everybody knows what a lot is, and everybody knows what a little is, and you make judgment based on whether they got a lot or a little. And you got all these judgments. You say, well, I don't completely trust the guy if he's got a lot. You don't completely trust the guy if he's got a lot. What are you saying? You trust him already. You just don't trust him completely. And what about a guy that's got nothing? Well, I don't just rule him out because he's got nothing. You don't just rule him out. You rule him out a little. You already started judging a guy. If he's got a lot, well, you're going to look a little careful so you don't get, deceived. If you got a little, well, you're going to look a little more careful so you don't get deceived. You already made a judgment. One guy's got a lot and you're on the lookout that maybe he's deceiving you. But maybe not. Probably not. And the other guy, maybe he's deceiving you. Maybe he's an angel in disguise. But probably not. You already went down the road. You've already made judgments. You're working against yourself to reverse your judgments. Kingdom of darkness is operating. You got the wrong set of rules going on. You're not judging whether somebody's walking in the light. You're looking at the clothing and you're making a judgment and then you're trying to avoid being deceived. You get it? The Messiah breaks in, transfers us from the kingdom of darkness to the kingdom of light. So we're not under the domain and the authority of darkness. Well, we spent most of our life living there. So we're slaves and we've just been set free. We're slaves to darkness and we've just been set free. And before we know what happened, we already developed patterns that have to do with judging according to the rules of the majority. The rules of the world. The rules of the newspaper. The rules of the politician. The rules of the average guy on the street. The rules of your neighbor. The rules of the president, maybe. Certainly when he's dealing with the Congress or the government, or he's giving a speech or other things. Oh, but he's a believer. Yeah, but he's got the public to talk to. And he's talking to all of us. And when he starts talking in terms of real light, the rest of the world jumps and says, I don't want to be run by no evangelical. And he's immediately unpopular over that. So he can't do this. He's going to get condemned by darkness and by, the average guy out there. You get it? Do you get a picture of what's going on here? In the beginning, God created what? Light and dark, and it was fine. And then we screwed up, and then what? Dark took on life of its own. Light took on life of its own. And we were in prison under the dark. And he had to send the Messiah, living salvation, to pull us out and transfer us from the kingdom of dark to the kingdom of light. And that's when the New Testament breaks in and we get a new start. That's the second or third new creation. But the first one going on is Torah. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And light is right in there, verse 4. Yichior, vayichior. God saw the light and he said it was good. It's good. Doesn't say he saw the darkness and it was bad. It says, and there was evening and there was morning. He said, he called the light, the day, light, the darkness, he called, well, no, choshech. And he called the night, he called darkness, night, and there was evening and morning.
But it was secondary.
The secondary. And it's not, the night is evil, and don't go out in the night. That's not what's going on. And there was evening and morning the first day, is a complete whole, and you got dark, and you got day and night, it's offsetting, and they're complements, and they represent the whole day, and nothing is bad about this. He doesn't say, and it was bad. You never have that. You have this is good, and the rest is going on, and they're opposites and complementary, but he's not saying light is good and darkness is bad. It's not set up that way. It's set up, there was evening, and that's darkness, and there was morning, and that's light, the first day, day one. And you got the evening, starts out with the evening and the morning, and it's a day. So, we have a picture then of life. Now, when we get to the Haftorah, it's Isaiah 42:5 to Isaiah 43:10, the Haftorah of Bereshit. And in that, we actually have, we're going to say this. The Torah is a blueprint. The Haftorah represents the lived experience of the community. So the blueprint is God's plan. And then what happens with the plan? Well, if you follow the plan, you're going to walk in blessing. And when you walk in blessing, God's going to pour out power. And things are going to work in a kind way for you. You're going to be fruitful. You're going to multiply. You're going to fill the earth. You're going to subdue it. And you're going to oversee it. And this is Genesis 1:28. Man is left to subdue and oversee creation. When you say subdue, it doesn't mean man is made to subdue man. It's man is going to put under his authority and oversee like a manager. The way God oversees the universe, man oversees the planet. It's all man collectively is a harmonized unity overseeing the plants and the animals on the earth. So this predatory idea, I mean, we're not running around killing animals. Adam was a vegetarian. God gave him the plants to eat. And he even gave the animals, if you look carefully, plants to eat. The animals were vegetarians. Not just man. So bite and devour wasn't part of the original creation. After the fall, you get bite and devour. And it starts happening before God okays it. He okays it in Noah. But it's going on after the fall. They clothe mankind in skins. Something had to die. We got the knowledge of good and evil creeping in. And when you want the knowledge of evil, once you've eaten from the tree that has the fruit of knowledge of good and evil, you're going to get good, like God's going to give you instruction, that's going to lead to Torah. You're going to get evil, so you're going to learn about sorrow, suffering, famines, exile, sickness, death, disease, predatorship, spilling blood on the ground, carnivoreship. And you're going to start getting kingdom of darkness where the big guy rules, and if you don't do it his way, he'll kill you. So it's his way or the highway, and he'll kill you. And this starts playing out. Adam gets banished from the garden after he eats. The ground gets cursed, which means it's tougher to make a living. And then after you're kicked out, guys are making sacrifices. Because Cain and Abel, you know, Abel, what is Abel doing? He's got flocks. He's sacrificing to God. He offers first fruits. Abel's killing guys. And Cain's a farmer. And Abel's was satisfactory. Hevel means transitory. So Abel, embodying transitory man, he's a second born. Abel goes out and he gets killed. Why?
Jealousy.
God accepts one and not the other. Now you can fault God for taking them both at the same time and saying a comparison was set up if you want to go hunt around for finding fault. But let me tell you something. This is God. You don't find fault. Say, well, didn't he know that was going to, you know, prick his jealousy? And, you know, if it pricked his jealousy, didn't he realize, you know, Cain could kill Abel over it? Well, sure, because Cain's not going to kill God, is he? Well, don't you want to kill God if he does that? Somebody does you a bad turn, why do you want to kill your brother? Go kill God. What did Abel do? He kills an animal, his best, offers it up to God. God goes, Reach Nikoach, a sweet-smelling savor, I accept it, it's wonderful, thank you. Cain offers his up, it's his second best. We don't know that exactly, Scripture's vague. God doesn't accept it, we know that. And we know Cain doesn't like it. And then God says, sin's crouching at the door. Mm-hmm. Don't give in to it. And Cain immediately takes the advice, right to heart, and does exactly what you'd expect him to do. He listens to God and doesn't let sin crouch at the door, right? Wrong. What does he do? He says, man, I wish I could throw a spear at the air. And he threw it as high as he could, and it came down, and it landed on Cain. I mean, Abel.
No.
See, he tried to kill God? No. He killed the first guy that was around, which was the only guy around at the time. Transitory man, and Abel lives up to his first destiny. Hevel, transitory. You're just passing through. You're a pilgrim. Good night. Boom. And he doesn't bury him. That's what a carnivore will do. He'll kill you, spill your blood on the ground, eat you, and leave. You ever see a carnivore give a funeral? Have you ever seen a carnivore give a funeral oration? Ken.
We do it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see when they buried the leftovers.
They buried the leftovers. I don't have time for tangents right now, but I'll tell you one because, you know, I can't avoid it.
And I started it.
Guy's walking down the path, a believer, brand new believer, encounters a lion. Right? And he looks at the lion, and he goes, man, I'm dead meat. And he drops to his knees, and he starts praying. He goes, oh God in heaven, you're the only one that can save me now, please! Do something! And he's praying, and praying, and praying, and praying. Finally, it dawns on him that he's been praying for quite a while. The lion must be gone. He opens up one eye, and sitting right next to him, he sees the lion on his knees praying. He goes, my God, it's a miracle! The lion opens his eyes and says, will you shut up? I'm saying grace.
Grace.
Now,
grace.
This should give you an idea where we're headed now. Grace. That which causes joy, favor, acceptance for a kindness bestowed. But we've been transferred out of the kingdom of carnivores into the kingdom of light. So the rules that are operating are, for us at least,
light.
The rules of the kingdom of light. Now, the rules of the kingdom of light say, God worked for 6 days, we work for 6 days. God rested in the grace on the seventh day, we rest in grace on the seventh day. How do you rest in grace? You don't build a kingdom on the seventh day. Why? God finished building the kingdom in 6 days. On the seventh day, he looked around, what was missing?
Rest.
And it's very important to get the thing and its opposite and to get into a rhythm. Because otherwise, you know what's going to happen? You're going to start building an empire on day 7 when God doesn't. And then you know what's going to happen? You're going to have an empire. And then you know what's going to happen? God's going to have to crash it. Because it's not the program. And if you're going to follow God, then you do it His way. The story is not about you. The story is not about what you do for God. The story is not about how you build God's kingdom for Him. The story is about God. It's His story. And it's not about what you are going to do. That puts you as a subject. It's about Him and what He's doing. And how maybe you fit into what He's doing. Not how you can do for Him. How you can fit into what He's doing for everybody. So you're a puzzle piece, and you've got to find your place in the puzzle. And you're designed a certain way, and you have to figure out where you fit. And you have to fit into the plan. Now, rest in grace. That means on Shabbat, if you're resting and you see an opportunity to build your empire, you know, the phone rings and somebody's got a great deal for you, and immediately your pace changed, you're in a hurry. You get what I'm dealing with here? Suddenly you're not resting anymore. You're in a hurry. You get it? On day six, the sun goes down, you light a candle. Now the candle's got its own rhythm. You're a candle. You don't do business on day seven. If you do business on day seven, I assure you, you're going to build an empire. And I assure you that if you build an empire, things are going to happen to it. And if God doesn't build his empire on day seven, and you're following, and it's kingdom of light, and you're following, you know, Moses, Noah comes along. How old is the guy when he gets into the ark?
600.
How long is he spending building the ark? 120 years, a full life. They had extra lives around there. But the point is, 480, he gets an instruction, build an ark. He builds an ark 120 years. He's 600, what happens? 365 days, a full year, the place is underwater and everything else. He comes back out, you know, you're going to have a new beginning. 6 and 1, he's 600. He's going to live to be 950. But at the age of 600, bingo, there's 100 years. The planet changes. Gets baptized. At the end of 6,000 years, there's going to be a millennium. Maybe times will be shortened for the sake of the elect. There'll be 1,000 years of makeup. Because we haven't Shabbatted around here. Israel, 420 years, they had the temple, got kicked out of the land 70 years. 70 sabbatical years missing. So in 490 years, at 420 years, like, what happened to sabbatical, guys? Well, we haven't been keeping it. Well, why not? Well, we don't know. You know, it's tough. You try it. No, it's tough. You try it. You're out of here. Come back in 70 years. The land will have ostriches. It's going to get some rest now. You're out of here, guys. Some 10-year-old says, Dad, what are we doing? When you're 80, you'll go back to the land. Yee! What happened for 70 years? He's still asking that question when he's 80 years old. You should live to see it, you know? 70 years? Go to Babylon. After that, the land has its rest. Without you. Why? Because you're going to sit on there and corrupt the thing. You won't let the land rest. Land's got to have some rest. You're killing creation. Creation's going to rest. 70 years, you don't do it. 420 years, you don't do it. It's time. I'm weighing in. Boom. For the earth, at 6,000 years, God's going to say, it's time. I'm weighing in. I want 1,000 years of peace around here. Put the Messiah up there. Knock everybody out. Rest! Why? You owe 1,000 years. Why? 6,000 years is enough. He telegraphed that from day one in creation, day seven in creation, when he rested. He telegraphed that when Noah is 600 years old, take some time off. The earth, start over again. Telegraph it for 6,000 years, it tells us 1,000 years coming. And so we're looking forward to a time when that's going to happen. And with the Israel, he telegraphed it, and in 420 years, we were in diaspora, Jeremiah 29:10, whatever. Jeremiah said, don't worry, guys, in 70 years, we'll be going back. Oh, thanks for the good news. I'm 40 now, I'll be 110. I won't make it. I'm out of here. Well, maybe my kid's kid will get back anyway. Of course he will. I just bought some land, you know. Who bought land before they left? Jeremiah. Ezekiel? Jeremiah? Who was it, huh? Jeremiah. He's announcing you're out of here for 70 years. Before he announces, I think I'll buy some land. It's a prophet. He's saying the land's going to be redeemed, but not with you guys for 70 years. It's going to get some rest first. After it gets some rest, we'll move on. There's something missing here. What's it called? Rest. So, first principle, okay, you know, 6 and 1, rest in grace. So Noah comes along, and he rests in grace. He builds the ark. What's his name? Noah. What's it mean?
Rest.
Rest, the one who rests. Eletoldot Noah. Noah. You can hear the guy up and down in the ark. He rested up and down as the whole place went underground. And I ask you, who is the greatest businessman in the world? And you know who it is. Noah. Why? He managed to float a limited company while the rest of the world went into liquidation. So Noah's out there. Noah's out there. He comes out and he becomes Av for the human race. The father. Father of the human race. Now here's Noah, and he's resting in grace. Now what is God's story? Okay, we're going to go to the Haftorah, back to Isaiah 42 and 43. Because this is the closest thing that I find to fill in what God's story is. You want to know God's story, don't you? If you know the storyline, like, you can get with the script. Right? We spent a lot of time talking about the story. Well, isn't it obvious that the story would be in the first Haftorah? In the first Haftorah, after you've got creation, understand something. God is going to build man, and then we're going to go way beyond the book of Genesis here. Man's going to disobey. Man's going to take heaven by force. God's going to hammer him. The end of the Tower of Babel. Then he's going to come back down, and he's going to say, okay, let's start down here. Av, that's father. We tried with Noah. That didn't work. 10 generations. Adam to Noah didn't work. 10 more generations. Noah to Abraham. We got the Tower of Babel in there. 70 generations. 70 people groups. Divide and conquer. Get everybody scattered so they can't take heaven by force. Build the ziggurat and pierce heaven. And go up there and say, we're in charge around here and united. We want to run free will down here without you, God. So we're going to set things up so that we don't have to have a godful place. We're going to have a godless place. We all agree on one thing only. That you're out. And that's Tower of Babel's about. We used to go up there and put bricks in place, and guys would fall off. We'd say, that's no big deal. A brick would fall off. We'd say, holy cow, the project's in trouble. We'd say Kaddish for the brick. Get another brick up there. People fall off, it doesn't matter. That's how backwards it was. God said, I better divide this place up. He goes down, scatters us. He said, I'll give languages so they can't agree on anything. And now, you know, you're trying to talk Yiddish to a Russian, and the Ethiopians are running around, and they're giving you all these different languages. It's impossible to figure out what anybody's saying. You can't agree with anybody on anything. That was the end of the Tower of Babel. So then God says, okay, we'll start down there. Abraham, what's his name? Av, father. Ram, exalted father. And Lech Lecha, we tell him, go start a household in faith. And Abraham, it becomes his new name. Father Hamon Goyim, father of a crowd, a mass of nations. He doesn't have any kids yet, and he's already told, you're not only going to be exalted, Father, now you're getting circumcised, we're going to call you Father of a mass of nations. Abraham's jumping for joy, isn't he?
No.
Go circumcise yourself. Oh! You want to jump for joy?
Ouch.
And he does. Vayera, God appears, comes with two angels to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, walks over to Abraham. Abraham jumps out and feeds him milk and meat. Today, we'll give you something to eat, or Sarah, fatted calf. We'll give you a little bit of bread. Knit everything, make it needed, everything perfect. Big banquet spread. Hospitality par excellence. It's the third day of the circumcision, the most painful day. This is the most hospitable person on the planet. What's he do with hospitality? Many have entertained angels unaware, starting with Abraham. And what does God tell him? Next year, this season, Yitzchak will be born. He laughs. Creation ex nihilo. Now, it isn't just any creation ex nihilo. It's going to be a new life. Creation ex nihilo, remember? Abraham believes, and in Genesis 15, he believes that's saving faith. Remember, creation ex nihilo is saving faith? Saving faith. Abraham, it's reckoned to him, Genesis 15:6, tzedakah, righteous merit. So the guy, because he believes on God, and that God's good for it, and that God will do it, because he believes that God's got the power to do it, and he believes God's good for it, he knows God's character, and he rejoices. He jumps for joy. I mean, the guy belly laughed. He goes, ha, 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 out of my... You know, first he believed him, and then later on, it's, it gets the name. It tells him Yitzhak. And God says, oh, you belly laugh, call him Yitzhak. Which means he laughs. But in Genesis 15:6, he takes him out, and he says, look at his stars. right? And he looks at the stars, and it's the Milky Way, right? So shall you.
Not the end of it, but the middle of it, which is larger.
Yeah.
You can really see a mass of billions.
Right. Billions of stars you'd see out there. And he says, so shall your seed be. Unbelievable. And the guy looked and he believed him. It's like, you don't have any kids in the world, and guess what? We're going to give you billions. And he believed it. Right now, you know, there's a billion people running around this planet that say they believe in the God of Abraham. They call themselves Christians. There's a billion people out there. And Abraham believed this. You know, he never saw Israel. He saw Jacob run out of town. He didn't see that. He saw Jacob and Esau when they were teenagers. That's about the time that the birthright was being sold. So he could see a little sibling rivalry going on. And that's it. He couldn't see Jacob being named Israel. He didn't see Jacob having 12 kids. Nahor, his brother, had 12 kids. Turned into a 12-tribe confederation. And he's got nobody. And then he's got one guy, Ishmael, and God says, no, it's going to be Isaac. And then he got Isaac, and Isaac got twins. And they say right off the bat to Rivka, when she goes to inquire, what is this? He says, oh, you're going to be two nations at war. This guy is seeing Cain Abel all over again, and then boom, dead. And wait for it. That's how far away he is from seeing the realization of the 12 tribes of Israel, or of the land, or of a billion descendants. His grandfather had twins that are fighting over a birthright. That's all he sees. And then X off, and he's still waiting. Oh, no, no, no. You know, he's with God right now, and he's looking down. Oh, and it's a real great scene to be looking down. Would that Ishmael will live. Okay, here's 284 from Ishmael. 284 million. Oh, they want the Temple Mount. Okay, Arafat wants to be buried in the Temple Mount. Okay. They're worried that 200,000 people are going to be in Ramallah, that they're going to storm Jerusalem, and the whole place is going to turn into a jihad, and a billion Muslims are going to attack. Oh, okay. Abraham, what do you see? Doesn't look good down there. You know. What do you mean? There's a billion people who believe in the God of Abraham. I think I'll go to sleep and wake up when his story becomes more evident. Because right now, I don't believe what's going on around here. Even if he could see, this is what he'd be looking at. Except he already sees there are going to be a billion people. He already sees the Messiah is going to come dwell. There's a lot of things that he sees. Back to his story. After Abraham winds up being promised a nation, and the nation goes and follows in the way of its forebearers, in the way of its corporate heads, then the nation will have the same experience collectively. So what's going to happen here? Isaac is going to become this kid that's slain in faith at the Akedah. And then Israel's going to become this corporate firstborn of God that's offered over there with Pharaoh, and they're going to kill the firstborns. And you kill the lambs, and the Egyptians will get you in the morning. Or else, you wait for the pogrom, and the Egyptians will get you. Or else, God's going to save you somehow, and you're going to get out. You don't know how. And God's going to knock off Pharaoh's firstborn instead of your firstborn. And here's Abraham with his firstborn, and he's dealing with God telling him, Ishmael's not your firstborn, Isaac is. Oh, okay. And by the way, go offer him on the Mount Moriah there. So he goes and take him over there, and bingo, God says, make him an Ola, I want you to smoke him up real good. And Abraham's looking at this and he's saying, what is this, the Holocaust? He said, no, because in the Holocaust we're only going to kill a third of the Jews. But you're going to kill Isaac completely. You're going to kill them all in embryo. We're going to take 100%. Well, what do you want me to do? Believe God's going to raise him from the dead after I smoke him up? I don't know what you're going to believe, Abraham. Deal with it. He doesn't procrastinate. Do you? That's what it is to be obedient, to know God's voice, and to be good for saving faith. But Abraham already had saving faith. It was reckoned to his righteousness before he even had Ishmael, let alone Isaac. When God said, so your descendants will be, and he believed him, God reckoned it to him as tzedakah, righteous merit, and that's Genesis 15. In 16, Sarah gets a harebrained idea. Why don't you have in vitro through the concubine, who's my legal property, Ishmael? God has heard, and then we'll say, God heard our prayer. And I'll take over. So she tries that harebrained idea. Hagar, of course, comes out of Egypt, concubine. Abraham follows Sarah's direction, mates with Hagar, has Ishmael, and then Hagar's going, on you, Sarah. And Sarah says, kick her out of here along with that kid. Now, if Abraham had the saving faith in Genesis 15, how come in Genesis 16, he doesn't know it's from Sarah's loins? Why is he so impatient that he listens to his wife? And he got 284 million Ishmaelites introduced here into the equation right now when this thing's being played out at the national level. You get it? That's part of the patriarch going along, and they sow something one way. Here's how it comes out. Sow it another way. Here's how it comes out. And God, he's not partial. He lets everybody do their thing, and he puts it all together, and he says, this is the world you're creating for yourself. And Abraham's got saving faith while he's conceiving Ishmael, and then later on, he comes and says, no, it's going to be from Sarah's loins. And he goes, wow, not just from my loins, from Sarah's loins too. Genesis 17. And God says, I love that belly laugh. Call him Yitzhak. I want you to remember you laugh forever. He laughed. He got personified living faith. And Isaac's got a through the Akedah. That's destiny. All right? You with me so far? Back to his story. Now look, I had to tell you, to jump ahead of Genesis to say Israel's going to become God's collective firstborn. So we're dealing with Isaac, and we're dealing with firstborns, and Ishmael's not the firstborn because the firstborn's chosen, and it's Isaac. And God says it's going to be through Isaac. And Abraham's saying, would that Ishmael would live! You know, Isaac's going to say, oh, Esau, get the birthright! Abraham's going to say, would that Ishmael would live! You see the card going on? Abraham, would that Ishmael would live! He will. It'll be a 12-tribe confederation. He'll be wild donkey, man. He'll be against his brothers against him. He'll do just fine. Oh, okay. But he's not the guy. The guy is Isaac. It's going to come through Sarah's line. Good. Call him Isaac. Got it. Okay. He's good for it. He was always good for it. Just didn't know what he was good for when he had saving faith in Genesis 15. He had the faith without knowing the content. Isn't that great? God tells him, Lech Lecha, go start a household. Where? I'll show you later. He's got saving faith. He left. Crash your empire, Abraham. Crash my empire. Yeah, leave Ur. I already did with my father. We're in Haran. Cross the river Euphrates. Okay, go down to land. Okay, I'm going down there. Where are you leaving? Your kindred. My kindred, man. That's like losing Social Security. Your father's house. My father's house. I mean, that's where I go for loans. Where am I going to go? To a land that I'll show you. What am I going to get? You find out later. They're saving faith. Crash your empire. Yes, sir. Out of here. Where's the empire now? Isaac. Okay, burn offering. Oh, yes, sir. That's saving faith. God can do something. He's creative. Ex nihilo. Whatever it is. I heard his voice. I can't question rationality. That's kingdom of darkness. I can't question truth. I don't know truth. The only truth I know is God's voice. He talked to me. That's truth. Doesn't matter if it doesn't add up. I heard his voice. Abraham's up there. He's going to cut the guy's throat. The angel comes in and says, Ekev asher shamata bekoli. On account of you listen to my voice, Isaac's seed will inherit the gates of his enemies. And you know, that's a prescription for anti-Semitism will take over the world. If you're anti-Semitic, I'll inherit your enemies. You want to kill me? I'm going to run away. You're going to kill me. God's going to come in, and I'm going to inherit your gates. Isn't it wonderful? You're in the kingdom of carnivores where anti-Semitism allows you to take over the world. All you have to do is run around and get killed all the time. Nothing to it, right? This is what it is to live in the kingdom of light while the carnivores are running around in darkness. Nothing's going for you except God and his revealed will. And you're against the universe and everybody else, and they're out to kill you, and you're not allowed to do anything except get killed. And believe God. Well, this is getting closer to his story. But understand something. He's setting it up. Why? I'm going to go back to beginnings, and then I'm going to go jump ahead, and then I'm going to come back to Isaiah. In the beginning, God created the universe, right? Who bailed? We did. What did we do? We disobeyed, we ate from the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. What did that do? It introduced death into the world. What did we do about that? We killed each other. Who killed who? Cain killed Abel, and the minute he did that, a curse fell on mankind. On Cain, right? Part of mankind. And that leads to the flood and the annihilation of the line of Cain. Takes 10 generations? Okay, 8 generations. Because no murderer will inherit 10 generations. 1,000 years, take over the world. No murderer will get eternal life. It was true then too. So Cain can be fruitful, multiply, generation to generation, seed, nations, going wild, cities, everything. Meanwhile, he keeps going in that way and he's unrepentant. Yeah. Well, God can't kill me. I got women and children. God won't kill women and children. Women and children that are raising carnivores? Generations of carnivores? Yeah, it's still women and children before they're corrupted. Before they're corrupted. They're good for carnivores. They're living in a carnivore household. The head of the house is calling the rule. Who's the head of the house? God? No. Some carnivore. Then the woman's in land of the carnivore. They're raising kids. The kids have the imprimatur of the parents. The character's passed on across generation. Character is caught, not taught. You're a carnivore. How long is this going to go? 10 million years. 7, 8 generations, and then the flesh. And God said, I'm not going to do that anymore. Okay, start over with Abraham. They're taking over the world. Split them up. Languages. Start with Abraham. One house. Okay, we're going to start with Abraham, one house. Now understand, Abraham is going to have a nation, and then the nation's going to be this thing that was created ex nihilo. Isaac, who never should have been born, who should have been exterminated, is going to then have a nation that's chosen for no good reason other than they were in the womb and God said second born. Now I'm going to show you why God said second born. He got the second born card from somebody else. Based on things we did, based on things God is redeeming. God works on problems for thousands of years. He's patient. One problem at a time. And until it's solved, he's working on one problem. He works on polytheism for a long time. He wants to get the world to believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You've got many gods out there. Even in the times of the Romans, they're still dealing with one God. The Romans don't believe in one God. The Greeks don't believe in one God. Today we laugh. Everybody believes in one God. You didn't get there lightly. Abraham was trying to get there for 1,500 years. And when Jesus came, they still hadn't gotten there. God works on problems for a long time before they get solved. Now, first problem is what? We want the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Okay, I got to teach you all about curses. I got to teach you about famine. I got to teach you about starvation. I got to teach you about death. I got to teach you about eating people. I got to teach you about cannibalism. I got to teach you about everything that's evil because you want the knowledge of good and evil. Okay, you're going to get it. We change our mind, God. Okay, we'll work it through. Well, I didn't want to do that. You did it. Well, I don't like having free will like that. Too bad. I don't want free will anymore. You got it. I don't like this experiment. Too bad. You're in it. Well, God, you're God. Why don't you design it some other way? Well, why don't you just depend on me with some saving faith and it'll change? Well, I didn't want to do that. Well, then you're going to get what it is. Okay, well, how is it? Well, we went into the Garden of Eden. We wanted to do it our way. We ate of the fruit. We got kicked out. God clothed us. We got new clothing now so we can cover ourselves up some more and run around in darkness a little more. We can't repent taking our clothes off. Not in this life. Okay, now what? Now what? Make offerings. Cain offers. Abel offers. Cain kills Abel. Now what's the justice for Abel? Abel, transitory mankind. And God cares about justice for Abel. Well, who's Abel? He's missing a whole world. He didn't have children and children's children and become a grandfather to the 10th generation. Is he righteous? People say, nobody's righteous. Abraham was reckoned righteous because he believed. Tzedakah. In the Torah, right? Jesus talks about Abel as being righteous. Matthew 23.
Somebody read Matthew 23, verse 30 and 31. I don't believe it. This can't be 10:30.
It's not.
Okay, that's
9:40.
Still, it's crazy. 9:40 already? I'm not even close. Okay, go ahead.
What is it?
I'm in big trouble. Matthew 23, 30, 31.
And say, if we lived in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets.
If we lived in the days of our father, we wouldn't have done what they'd been partakers of the blood. We wouldn't be carnivores killing prophets. That's what they say. 31.
Therefore, you are witnesses against yourselves that you are...
Who's talking?
Yeah, Jesus.
And who's he against? Who's he mad at right now?
The hypocrite.
This in family, and in family, you know, you call family what they are, right? This is family. This is a Jewish argument going on inside a Jewish house. And he's going, you guys, you know, you're a temple custodian. You're in charge of the world's problems right now. You know better. And what are you doing? You turn the temple into a sarcophagus. 31.
Therefore, you are witnesses against yourselves that you are sons of those who murdered the prophets.
So 10 generations now since you killed Zechariah. 32.
Fill up then the measure of your father's guilt.
Measure for measure. That's God when he's mad. Justice. Remember, we don't like justice. We like kindness. We don't want justice. Now, this is one of the worst things I can tell you. Because all you people, you know, you live to do things right, and you live better lives than all your neighbors. And I'm telling you, throw it all away, because it's worth nothing. And you're going, oh, no, don't tell me that. That's really discouraging. It's not fair. And I'm going, that's right, it's not fair. You're not living in a fair world. You want to live in a kind world. If you live in a fair world, you're going to wind up in the days of Noah, and you're going to get justice. He's going to kill everybody. Now, he's got a covenant. He won't do it this round. Now, does that mean you shouldn't be righteous? Oh, of course you should be righteous. Why? Because you should be sanctified. Why should you be sanctified? So you can walk in the light and you can live near God. Why should you live near God? So he'll hear your voice and you'll hear his voice. But it's relational. It has to do with where you're situating yourself. It doesn't have to do with you building a kingdom for God. It doesn't have to do with you being better than your neighbor. The minute you start thinking you're better, you're putting a standard up, like you're God. The minute you say you're God, you're elevating yourself. You don't want to judge. Yeshua says, judge not lest ye be judged. If you judge, you're putting a standard out there. It's going to come back on you. And are you going to live up to your standard? You don't want to live in that world. You want to live in a world where God's kind to you and he cuts you some slack. You want to live in a world where you can screw up once in a while and not get hammered. Which would you rather be? Better than everybody else and get super hammered? Or kind, let everybody get away with being worse than you, but you don't get hammered. Except by them. But not by God. You want to be hammered by God once in a while, or you want to be hammered by the people that hate your guts a million times more? So, I'm going to let that sit for a minute. Keep reading Matthew 23.
Serpents, brood of vipers, how can you...
Brood of vipers. And you know, it isn't just brood of vipers, it's generation of vipers.
Offspring, it says.
Yeah, offspring. Now, we're in Toldot, do you understand? Now go to Hazinu, Deuteronomy 32. You guys are good at this. And, you know, verse for verse. What verse are we on here in Matthew?
33.
Go read 33 in the Hazinu. Are you kidding, Jeff? One for one?
33?
You bet. One for one. Almost the entire chapter in Matthew corresponds to almost the entire chapter of Hazinu, verse for verse.
Their wine is snake poison. Cruel venom of vipers.
Now what happens after... Now, we know they're talking about the enemy, except this is really that jihad where nobody learns from experience, and so it's Israel sort of following after the nations, becoming the nations too. And once you got that, then you got this viper deal, which Yeshua comes and says, yep, vipers. Now, 34, what does that say in Hazinu?
Isn't this hidden with me? Filled in my storehouses.
I'm God. I'm weighing all this stuff. I'm keeping track. 35.
Vengeance and payback are mine,
Ah, stop right there. Oh. Now, the minute you get any kind of payback, the minute you want justice, you're doing God's job. And when you're doing God's job, you're starting to work. And when you're starting to do God's job and you're starting to work on Shabbat, you're building an empire that He's going to tear down every time. That's where you're being better than everybody and being righteous and doing more good stuff. It's going to come back on you. You get a picture of what I'm saying here? If you do God's job, He's going to hammer you. If you set yourself up to be referee, if you put yourself in God's position, what God's doing, see, is He's cutting you more slack and He's cutting them more slack. But don't you always notice that everybody around you gets away with stuff you can't get away with? Haven't you noticed that? Isn't that true? Is there anybody that's not true in this room? Anybody? Come on, one hand. We're talking about universal witness here. I'm explaining to you why. If God is giving you grace, He's giving them grace. And if He's giving them grace, it's always going to go longer than when you know it's unfair. By definition, He's got a genius mind, and He's figuring out how He can still show them kindness. And He knows things about them that you don't. And so even though they're doing rotten stuff to you, God's not ready to intervene yet because He's cutting everybody grace. Now, He'll stop cutting people grace when you look outside and it's raining on your property and not on your neighbor's. At that point, the rules changed. Until then, He's cutting them as much grace as you. He puts the rain down and they get the vegetation and their crops multiply and they get rich just like you. And the minute you see rain falling on both sides of the lawn, yours and your neighbor's, and that guy's a wicked, bad guy, and you're a good guy, and you're getting the same rain, then there's grace going on. And as long as there's grace going on, God's bestowing kindness on them and you, and it's going to go longer than you think is right every time. You get it? So get used to that. And then instead of getting mad over it, because that's self-righteous, you're setting yourself up as God now, and you think it's unfair.
Jonah.
The minute you think it's unfair, guess what? When you go, that's unfair. You realize what you just did? You just jumped out of the grace world into the works world. And the minute you jump from grace to works, you're going to wind up doing works on Shabbat. And the minute you do that, you're going to build an empire on Shabbat. And the minute you do that, He's going to tear it down. Every time. Noah, what are you going to do? Get in the ark, we're tearing the whole world down. Then you can be the father of everybody. Father of a mud swamp! It's all right. Start over. There's nobody around. No neon signs, nothing. Don't worry, Noah, you're the father of everybody. 10 generations later, it's all wicked again. Abraham, we'll start with you. Spread them out. Tower of Babel. Build a righteous household. Now understand, after he does this, he builds Israel. And who is Israel? God's corporate son, that's his firstborn among the nations. Now remember, we got a thing going here. God is going to do a few things. He's going to sanctify and glorify his stuff. His kingdom, his property, and that includes you, whether you like it or not. That's if you're playing by grace. If you're playing by works, I don't know. But otherwise, whether you like it or not, you're going to get glorified. And it isn't based on what you do. It's based on God and His story. Whether you like it or not. It's not based on what you do for Him to build His kingdom. No. It's based on grace. And grace causes joy for kindness bestowed. And the kindness is a favor done without expectation of return. God is going to do you a favor without expectation of return. And He expects you to do the same thing. And if you don't live in a world where you do favors without expectation of return, then you don't know what it's like to be godly. And you're not living in a gracious world. If you don't live in a gracious world, you're not going to sow grace. And if you don't sow grace, you're not going to reap grace. But the cost is, all this righteousness that you've accumulated, they're going to get away with it and you have to give it all up. You lost it. I mean, it's an advantage that you just give away. It's an advantage, but you give it away. Why? Because you don't get anything from God. Does Abraham have a right to boast? Yes, but not with God. Well, do you have a right with your righteous works to boast with God?
You can boast against your fellow man, but can you boast against God? And we're teaching you boasting means glory. And glory means let your light shine before men. Put in parentheses, that they might see your good works. Let your light shine before men that they might
see their good works and glorify the Father.
So forget the parentheses. Let's hear it again. Let your light shine before men. Forget the, I don't want to hear that part. Let your light shine before men so that they glorify your Father who is in heaven. Let your light shine so they glorify the Father. Let your light shine so they glorify the Father. Light on, light on. Kingdom of light, kingdom of light. Light the light. But you get sidetracked with the works. You do something for God. Do you have a reason to boast with God? You can boast with other people. But do you want to? Do you want to be boasting to them or do you want to be glowing with God? If you got works hat on, you're looking at the wrong guy at the wrong time. You're looking at those guys and you're exalting yourself for a good reason in the kingdom of darkness while you could be looking at God and shining and He's happy with you and you're happy with Him. And these guys, you don't even care they're there because you got sidetracked. You're glowing with your Father. And they see you glowing, and what do? Monkey see, monkey do. Values are caught, not taught. You glow, they glow. You shine, they glorify your Father in heaven. Shine, and they'll glorify your Father in heaven. Shine, and they'll glorify your Father in heaven. You get a picture here? I'm dealing with transcendence. I'm dealing with living in the kingdom of light. I'm talking about what it means to abide. First, you have to dwell in the kingdom of light. Then you have to abide in the kingdom of light. And then you have to live in the kingdom of light. When you dwell in the kingdom of light, it's you're born again, ex nihilo, faith, you believe God. You've been transferred from light, transferred to light, from the kingdom of darkness. You're now under a different authority structure. You're born again. You're saved. When you're saved, you're redeemed from the kingdom of darkness, First Colossians 1:13, and put in the kingdom of light. And now you can start glowing. And what are you in a destiny to do? Being sanctified, where you abide in the light, and then being glorified, where you live in the light. So you've been transferred to the light, so you can abide in the light, so you can live in the light. You've been redeemed, so that you can be sanctified, so you can be glorified. You get the picture here? Yeshua radically breaks in to give us light, so we can be transferred from the darkness to the light, because the darkness got corrupted, so that we can abide in the light, being sanctified, until we live. That's the Mount Sinai model. You come to the mountain, you're walled off like the people on Ha'aretz, you get sanctified, you go up there with the elders, you go up higher with the priests, you go up higher with Moses, you come back shining. Moses 40 days in the mountain, come back shining. Say, well, that glory, you know, it faded. Yeah, your glory should fade like that. You know, once you come back shining, you can let your light shine before men, and they will glorify your Father in heaven. And once that's happening, it's like you'll go from Moses to like being Yeshua, being in His image. You'll go abiding and then living in the light. You'll become like Him. You instead of going back to yourself and being in the kingdom of carnivores, are going to become a son of light that lives in the light, and you're going to walk around like glorying in the kingdom of light, in the presence of God. You get the drift here? You want to sort of sanctify up the mountain until you live on the top of the mountain with Moses and with Yeshua. The disciples come, and Moses is still trying to get in the promised land. Mount of Transfiguration takes place, and what happens, right? Moses and Peter standing there together, and Elijah, and he introduces the Messiah, and everybody's glowing, right? And then they come out and they go, wow, it's tabernacle time. Feast of light, and let's go crazy here. And he says, get behind me, Satan. It isn't time for that. What did they see? They saw glorifying. They saw glorified bodies on Yeshua, on Moses, on Elijah. Moses is sitting there saying, who's this? Elijah saying, that's the Messiah. Moses saying, who are you? He's saying, I'm Elijah. He says, oh, okay, I never knew that. Moses is glorying in the fact that God answered His promise that he can enter the promised land. Touchdown, meet Messiah, get a glorified body, and live happily ever after in glory land. And when did it happen? When Yeshua was around. It's a done deal. That's no coincidence. That's moving up the mountain and living there. That's getting an answer after you die. That's salvation. That's life from the dead. Moses died to get transplanted in the promised land in the presence of Messiah in a glorified body.
So Yeshua got one later. Moses got one when Yeshua was here and alive. Well, there's cards being dealt. You want to get the Moses card? You got to get up the mountain. You want to get up the mountain? You got to be sanctified. You want to be sanctified? You got to learn how to dwell in the light. So you can abide in the light. Once you abide in the light, you live in the light. Once you live in the light, glory. When? Now! Spiritual dynamic. Does that mean you'll be saved right now? What kind of question is that? You're saved yesterday. But you won't really experience it until tomorrow. Judgment day is when you experience it. They'll open the books and are you written or you're not. That's when some guys will say, we were casting out demons. I didn't know you. King of the darkness for you. You're out. People don't know. So how are you really going to know? You know him, you know his voice. You believe he's good for it. You got a relationship. He knows, you know. That's it. What happens after that? Abide. Okay, move on. So the big picture in Isaiah is this. Israel's in exile. People are without hope. The prophet comes to live in another's house. The transfer to authority of God's house. Israel, what happened? We didn't keep the covenant, so what happened? We stoned the prophet, so then what happened? We went into exile, so then what happened? The land's keeping its Shabbats and we're in exile. So then what happens? Isaiah comes along and says, don't worry guys, you get to go back. Jeremiah's going, you get to go back. Ezekiel's going, you get to go back. Jeremiah's buying land. Isaiah wrote it earlier. We're reading Isaiah. We stripped the thing in. But Isaiah's talking about then, and they're in exile, and there's we. And what does it go on to say in Isaiah 42:6? When God is creator. God plans to release the people from servitude, exile, and bondage. God called you. Called you. In righteousness. God summons Israel by his grace, tzedek. Isaiah 42, verse 6. That's that same word, tzedek. Tzedekah is the feminine righteousness. Tzedek, grace. To be a light to the nations. Israel, God can be trusted. Prior promises are fulfilled. And what? Isaiah 42:10. To glorify his name. This is Israel in exile, and they don't believe. We don't believe we're going to go back. Israel, blind and unresponsive to the divine initiative. Isaiah 42, verses 18 to 20. Blind and unresponsive. I mean, can you hear Hazinu in here? Divine initiative, but we're blind and unresponsive. How are our families right now? Oh, I know Yeshua. I'm blind and unresponsive. Don't talk to me about this stuff. Blind and unresponsive. And then what? Counterpoint. The Lord desires his servants' vindication. Tziv Ko. Isaiah 42:21. That he might magnify and glorify his Torah. So God wants to magnify and glorify, and he desires vindication. So he can do the magnifying, he can do the glorifying. You want to do his job? He wants to do it better than you. He wants them to kick you around a little longer. So you're a little more humble before you get exalted. And so they're a little more proud before they fall. It's always going to be longer than you expect. Because there's always a little room for them to repent. And then they don't, and they do it worse. And there's still a little more room. And you're getting more humble. And finally, when you get humble enough, you won't be saying, well, God, look what they're doing to me. This isn't fair. They're kicking me around. The kingdom of darkness is taking advantage of me. God, I always get beat up. I got such a bad self-image, God, because I'm always getting beat up. Get used to it. That's not part of the picture. That's you worrying about hubris. That's you with your pride. They'll beat that out of you. After that, you won't care if you're getting beat up. But if you got your mind on fair, you're going to get beat up plenty, aren't you? And it's going to be more unfair every time it gets longer, isn't it? And you're going to be in hell until they beat that out of you. And they're going to beat that out of you when you get humbled enough. When you're humbled enough, then God says, uh-oh, the guy's humble. And then the enemy, lo Adonai, Paul Kolzo, there is no God, we did this. And you're down there, the bloody eyeball like Abel, the bloody eyeball like Zechariah, the bloody eyeball like Jesus. After they put the spear in him and the blood pours out on the ground. Dead. And there you are in carnivore land. You got the blood on the ground. And you, ah! And you're in a humble place. And you're naked. Zechariah is screaming. God, remember they did this? Continue the story. Isaiah 43, verses 3 to 6. Unilateral vindication here.
This is God with unilateral vindication. Traces of it in 43:1-6, Isaiah. God will restore Israel to the whole land, verses 3-6. God will deliver Israel from blindness, verse 8. The role of the servant is to lead the blind to the light of freedom, verses 6 and 7 in Isaiah 42. And then he challenges the nations and the idols. Believe God's new word of hope, verse 9. And glory in God's uniqueness to keep covenant promises, Isaiah 43, verse 10, the last verse in the Haftorah. And when you read it, 43:10, it sounds just like Reu ata ki ani ani hu si. I, yes, I am he. Ve'ein Elohim imadi. You know, there's no gods with me. Ani ami ve'achaye. I, myself, I bring death and restore life. Bring death and restore life. Mahatsti, I have wounded. See, that's... Yeah. Vani erpa, and I will heal. Ve'en miyadi, and there's no one from my hand. Matzil. Who rescues. So God's the eye, even when you're getting wounded. And even when the carnivores are doing it, he's letting it go right under his eyeball. And he's God. And he knows all about it. But that's not the end of the story. Verse 10 goes on, God will glory in his uniqueness to keep covenant promises. And where we're left is, do we learn from experience? So what happens here? The picture here is God, the people, are in exile. And the story is we don't have the faith, the saving faith, to believe we're ever going to get out of exile. And the story is God takes initiatives and we're blind and dumb to it. And we don't respond very well. And meanwhile, God is going to glorify and magnify his Torah, verse 21 in Isaiah 42. He's going to restore Israel to the homeland. He's going to deliver Israel from blindness. And it's not just Israel. That's his firstborn. It's everybody going to follow. Believe God's new word of hope, verse 9. 43, verse 9. And glory in God's uniqueness to keep his covenant promises, verse 10. That's the picture of story. So Israel's in exile, the people are without hope, and the prophet's trying to convince the people of God's power to save and God's promise to redeem. And the redemption for Israel at that time is redemption of bondage from another's house, Babylon, to what? Getting into God's house. When the Messiah comes, redemption is going to be what? From the kingdom of darkness, Satan's house, the adversary, to get into the kingdom of light, which is God's house. All right, let's see what we can put together here. I'm going to try to move through all the Haftarah to get to the present one in Toldot. We start out with grace, and grace causes joy. It's for a kindness that God bestows. It's God giving us chesed, and our response is joy. And rejoice and glory. Our response to God's kindness is it turns our light on. And God's grace is for, in the modern believer, it's for forgiveness of sin, and it's to convince the people of God's power to save and God's promise of redemption. And he's going to deal with what?